Welcome to Sex Chat for Christian Wives. I'm Chris Taylor of Honeycomb and Spice.
I'm Gay Christmas of Calm, Healthy, Sexy.
I'm Jay Parker of Hot, Holy, and Humorous.
And I'm Bonnie Burns of Strong Wives.
Pull up your chair to our virtual kitchen table and let's chat.
Welcome to another episode of Sex Chat for Christian Wives. We are thrilled to welcome internationally known sex educator Joyce Penner, who together with her husband Cliff pioneered the paradigm shift that sex is good and of God. They've helped millions of couples connect their sexuality with their spirituality. They hold healthy sexuality seminars, have many DVD courses, and have authored numerous books, including The Gift of Sex, a landmark Christian sex manual, and one of the reference books used in my human sexuality class in college. Recent book is Enjoy, The Gift of Sexual Pleasure for Women. So we are so happy to have you sitting with us around our virtual kitchen table today, Joyce. Thank you and welcome.
Welcome. Well, thank you. This welcome. Is fun. A real treat.
Awesome. We tend to have fun, so yeah. Feel free to laugh.
Good. Great. Great.
All right. So let's just launch right in, as we typically do. Let's discuss, why do you think some wives have a hard time seeing sexual intimacy as a gift?
Well, that is a big question. And I was thinking that could take 2 hours just to answer that question. That's why we wrote the book Enjoy, The Gift of Sexual Pleasure for Women, because so many, particularly in the Christian setting, have gotten the idea that sex is not for them. It's just something they do for their husband. And how that ever got translated from scripture, I'm not sure, but I think it was taught for many years in some situations. What we actually have are 5 H's that help us define why it is that women sometimes don't see sexual intimacy as a gift for themselves. And one is history. I'll just review them quickly and then go back over them. Health, and along with health, hormones, home, what's happening in their home now, and habits. So history is a big one. If they were raised in a sexually disparaging home or church community, or teaching that it's the wife's duty and his right, then that will set it up that they don't see it as something for themselves. Obviously, any past sexual trauma, abuse, then takes that away from her as a gift and was taken away, and it's hard for her to claim it for herself. Raised in an alcoholic or emotionally out of control home can cause that, because what happens when we're in a sexual experience is the place where we most lose control and let ourselves be out of control. And if you know anything about ACAs, or adult children of alcoholics, we have a high need for control. And so letting ourselves be out of control is something an ACA really fights. So that gets in the way of it. And then sometimes the whole thing that happens, and this is, we get calls about this a lot, is in order to save sex for marriage, we shut down on our feelings rather than to control our actions, rather than letting ourselves remain in touch with our feelings. I just dealt with a woman about this a few weeks ago who called and was just married a few months. And she read it in our book, Getting Your Sex Life Off to a Great Start, and said, that's exactly me. I shut it all off. And then I thought when I got married, I'd be totally hot to trot. And she wasn't. The switch didn't just go on because she said, I do. And so we do a lot of teaching before marriage about how we can keep our sexuality, our passion, the drive that God designed in us alive while making choices about our action. So that's a big one, history. Health, that I can go over much more quickly. Obviously, when there are physical issues, you know, as we age, which I am in that category, there can be emotional.
We are.
So there can be emotional issues. You know, if we have a lot of anxiety or depression, we're not going to have a lot of energy for sex or see it as. And then there are sexual problems or sexual unhealthiness that can cause it to seem like it isn't for us. If we have difficulty responding, if we have pain during sex, all kinds of issues like that. Hormones, if your hormones are out of balance, you can try all you want and it's not going to work. That happens sometimes in pregnancy, breastfeeding, menopause, taking the birth control pill. Lots of reasons our hormones can be out of whack. And then the home, and this will be my longest answer, by the way, after this, but the home, if there is sexual demand, then the wife shuts down over time. And often the sexual demand comes when a husband measures his self-worth or how he is loved by how she responds to him sexually. And often that comes when the husband didn't get the affirmation he needed growing up from his mother, from women in his life, whatever happened, some kind of trauma with women. And then he constantly is monitoring her. Today, how are your day? Is going to be as good as last time? Did you enjoy it? And those kind of things just shut it down for herself. And then if there's a destructive relationship, lifestyle, we always say it takes sex to make children, but once you have children, they kind of get in the way of your sex life. And I'm sure all of you may have experienced that at some point. So, and then just differing expectations or things that come along in the home. Habits, the last one is our habits. And habits can just be, we get into the habit of not thinking about it, not planning for it. We're not intentional about it. We hope it will just happen. We kind of wait for it rather than, you know, we think it's going to overtake us and it doesn't after a while. You know, that initial surge of excitement has to change over time. We change from that initial attachment energy to long-term attachment. Mm-hmm. And long-term attachment is much more mellow, kind of quiet love rather than excited love. And sometimes we don't make that shift easily. We think it will always be like it was in the beginning. So those are, that's a long answer to why wives sometimes have a hard time seeing sexual intimacy as a gift. But that's how I would look at it.
Yeah, I checked off a lot of those things in my own marriage over during our difficult years. Every one of them, I think.
I mean, when you think about all those, it's kind of like it's a miracle it ever does work out well.
that we actually do sometimes think it as a gift.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think that history piece was the most important one for me, but it, kind of an interesting way, because a lot of wives, they actually had sort of this bad history and they did not enjoy the sexual arousal or any of that. It was scary or it was a traumatic thing or whatever. And yet there were also some people like me where I didn't want to do that and then maybe engaged in some activities that actually felt really great and I really did enjoy it and then felt a lot of guilt. And so it wasn't a gift because I knew it wasn't where it was supposed to be, how it was supposed to be. And then making that transition once I was in marriage, it was difficult. So I think there are a lot of wives too, who maybe they enjoy the physical experience, but it still doesn't feel like a gift because it doesn't.
That's a good one. And I did not bring that up as part of the history. And that is important because sometimes when we get our sexual response is connected with something wrong rather than right. Then when we move into marriage and it's right, it's like we can't quite give ourselves permission to enjoy it. So that's excellent.
And I think that happens a great deal with women who were sexually abused as children.
Yes.
That's, I mean, I have a woman I'm working with who every so often, you know, she'll make strides and she'll start to feel better about feeling sexual in her marriage. And all it takes is one little thing to all of a sudden just fill her with shame and guilt again. And she's way farther along than she was 10 years ago, but it's a very slow process.
Yeah, it can revisit. What we encourage when a woman or a man has had past sexual abuse to talk it over with their spouse. And when it gets triggered, often something in the sexual experience reminds them, triggers that past abuse connection, and that they have some kind of a nonverbal signal that she can give him when that happens that empowers her and breaks that connection with the past abuse. Because what we find, what sex in the brain research has shown, and we've observed in our clinical experience over these 40 some years, is that the first way we experience arousal, like what it is connected with or associated with, what it triggers, is often what we call one trial learning. We get hooked on that and it's hard to break. We stay connected and we have to break that. And one way to break it is when that re-triggers that memory, that we find a way to communicate and break that pattern and that those reminders.
In our marriage, it was the shift between the shiny new arousal, that lots of sparks, to what you've said, into the long-term satisfying marriage. And how I have described it to my husband is that God is in that still small voice. That's what sex is now. It's more deep and meaningful.
Yes, stuff. It's what can last a lifetime.
Yeah, yeah. And so, I love that you focused in the book on the dopamine versus the oxytocin.
Yes.
I'm a science nerd.
Yeah. So. When I read that, I just wondered if so many people don't realize that and they think there's something wrong 10 years into marriage because they're not having this, you know, first year excitement, thrill, you know. And is that one of the reasons people go looking for affairs or whatever, because they don't
Absolutely.
Understand that that mm-hmm. can't be sustained long term?
Right. Yes. And they will come into our office and say, I just don't think I love her anymore, or I just don't think I love him anymore, because they connected love with that feeling that grabs you. Mm-hmm. You know, we always say you get that initially and maybe sometimes on vacation.
Yeah.
But for the most part, it's got to shift to something deep and close and warm if it's going to last. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we always are looking for something new. And that's what often gets people into pornography, which is so destructive, or gets them trying different relationships. Then they usually come to us after several marriages and say, maybe it's me. You know, because mm-hmm. it keeps happening, and they think, oh, then they find someone while they're married who triggers that excitement again. And they think, oh, it's, you know, it's just because the marriage isn't good that I'm not feeling that excitement. And now this guy, he's really causing me to feel excited again.
Yeah.
So let's go ahead with our next thought. You devote a chapter in Enjoy to a wife leading in her sexuality. Could you talk about what you meant by that and what it might look like, particularly for a woman who believes that she has a lower drive or just less enthusiasm for sex than her husband?
That's the person who should definitely lead. And the reason is because sex works best for both of them when they're together in terms of their level of intensity and activity. In this kind of a discussion, we almost always have some woman who says, but for me, it's just the opposite. I'm the one who wants it more and he doesn't. The one who wants it more and has more energy for sex needs to get with the one where that person is, who is less intense. And so let's talk about the woman now, who doesn't have as much interest and is not as intense sexually. If her husband gets with her where she is, and we talk about this in the Married Guy's Guide to Great Sex, how the husband is to love his wife sexually like Christ loves the church. It isn't like, you know, we got to kind of catch up where he is. He gets with us where we are, and then we grow in that with him. And that's what happens sexually when the woman isn't as intense, isn't as interested, when the husband can slow his pace, get with her where she is, both in intensity and activity, and let her listen to herself. And she has to learn to do that and lead with her sexuality, not with demand either. Neither, it never works if either are demanding. All of the references to sex in marriage in the New Testament talk about mutuality. You know, give yourselves one to another. This is a mutual experience, as we see in 1 Corinthians chapter 7 in particular. It can't be mutual if one is always ahead of the other. We had a couple once in therapy that described it so well. They said, we know exactly what you mean. We go bike riding together. And when his wheel stays a little bit behind mine, we keep up and go just great together. But when he starts getting ahead, we get farther and farther apart. I get lagging behind and he gets way ahead of me. And so if you kind of have that kind of an image in your mind of how this can work, and this obviously takes, and we're talking to wives, this also takes the role of the husband to do that. But it is so important that she learn to listen to her body and lead with those feelings and get with those and affirm those. And thank God every time she has a little tingle, even if there's not much there, just get with as little as there is and let it grow.
During our difficult years, one of the things I said to my husband was, because he was in my mind bugging me about sex every day, there was no space in which I could learn to experience my own desire and interest, because I was at such a place of defense at the time that I never knew what it was to want. Due to a variety of circumstances, he backed off. And all of a sudden, all sorts of things came together. And one of the things was that there was enough space for me to start to want to have sex. And that was sort of where my brain started to switch.
That thing happens, you know, where he's saying, well, what do you want? Just tell me, what would you like to do? You know, and she perceived that as demanding
pressure.
I think because she hasn't done what you said of exploring her sexuality, finding out for herself what she needs and wants. And he's asking her, and she honestly has no idea. So it feels like a demand or pressure.
Mm-hmm. And some men I think probably a lot of men just don't understand how you cannot know what you like. And so it's perceived as an excuse when it's actually the truth.
Right. Yeah. I was thinking about that too, because especially, you know, I've lived in a house of men, we're empty nesting now, their sexual organ is out in front of them all the time. They know every single thing that makes it erect. And we don't know everything that's happening down there. I at one point said to my husband, I said, I cannot even see anything down there unless I get a mirror. You don't understand. Like so it's all kind of mental and trying to catch up with what's going on in your body. Right. So it's just a more complexity for a woman and needing to figure out what our sexuality is and what really arouses us.
Definitely. And they know that from at least age 2.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My husband said, that was our first, that's a guy's first toy.
Oh, yeah. 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 I really like how you talked about and enjoy how much more complex a woman's sexuality is. And therefore, some amount of work has to go into on the part of both of them, figuring it out.
Mm-hmm. And our emotions have to be in parallel, in sync with our physical, and the two have to connect. Whereas men, when their body is responding, their emotions tend to be right there. Mm-hmm. Whereas we don't, our body can be responding and we don't even, like you say, we're not used to noticing or even realizing it's responding. Mm-hmm. So one of the things we encourage is, you know, to notice and for husbands to affirm when they notice the body is responding.
I particularly liked what you said about listening to herself. Not only does the husband need to give you space to start listening, but it goes back for me, it goes back to that still small voice again, because it really was a small thing to listen to until it grows and you nurture it through intention, mm-hmm. and it can develop.
And thanking God for it, particularly if we come with the faith. So many times we, like Jay, you were mentioning earlier about when it was connected, when you felt it, but it wasn't, you didn't think it was right. You had guilt with it. Then we kind of shut it off and don't listen to it because we don't think God wants us to feel it. But he does. Mm-hmm. And thanking him for those feelings and thanking him for creating us with those feelings.
Yeah, I was really nervous to express to my husband and in the bedroom what I did enjoy and that I was enjoying it because of that guilt. And so it is that control thing that I was, you know, tamping down on it. And I know that that's a story I've heard from other wives.
And my shift was when I realized that sex within marriage was different than the carnality that was talked about in the Bible, because I kind of linked them both together. Sex is just sex within marriage or without a marriage. And there's a difference.
Yes, and so many times we have just taught, don't do it before marriage, but we don't teach because God so values it in marriage. It's so important. It's used throughout scripture to teach how he wants to relate to us as his people. It's so highly valued. That's why don't do it before marriage. But many times that's all we got. So we didn't know that it's supposed to be good and enjoyed in marriage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we forget often that it's sex was God's idea and God's creation. And absolutely. I remember the first time I intentionally prayed during sex, and it just, it felt so weird, but I do it all the time now.
Right. Yes. And one thing we often hear from women, particularly when there's been past sexual abuse, when I go in the bedroom to make love with my husband, I close the door and leave God outside because they have a hard time connecting it with good and of God, and being able to reestablish that connection or establish it for the first time when it's been taken away and misused and wasn't of God with that abuse and violation is a very important step.
We'd like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Infinite Moon, creator of luxurious bedroom supplies, especially their latest product, Eversheets. Eversheets are 100% bamboo deliciousness. Seriously, we've all received a set to be able to honestly share with you how marvelous they feel.
Yeah, I love my sheets. They are so soft and smooth, and I've enjoyed them so much that actually I'm going tonight to do a sleep study to see if I have apnea. And so they said I could bring like a blanket and pillow. And I was like, oh, I don't need that. And I was like, yes, I do want my pillow. And I want my pillow, not just because of the pillow, but because of that soft pillowcase that I want my head on. So it's great. I just think they're fantastic sheets. I love them.
Yeah, they're lovely. They're silky, but not slippery. I don't like slippery sheets. You know, and they're like kind of cool, but not cold. They feel really good on your skin.
So check out Eversheets and other chemical-free products at infinitemoon.com. Use coupon code SEXCHAT in your cart for 25% off Eversheets and 10% off all other products. Yeah, that's a really good
discount. That's a good, great coupon. Mm-hmm.
The code and link will be in our show notes. So thank you very much, Infinite Moon. And now, back to our conversation with Joyce Penner. So it's not unusual for us on the episodes to address desire differences because mismatched sex drives can be a source of conflict. Let's talk about how to make those desire differences actually work for us.
One thing I want to first just describe, when there are differences, it's amazing how they become exaggerated. For example, when a couple comes to us for sexual therapy, we have them fill out this little assessment. We do a major assessment, but just before we even meet with them initially. And one of the questions is, how often would you like to have sex? And how often do you think your spouse would like to have sex? Typically, the traditional one is the wife wants it less than the husband. Not always true, but let's use that as the example. The wife will say, well, I'd like it once or twice a week, and he would like it at least every day. And the husband will say, well, I'd like it 2 to 3 times a week, but she never wants it. Now, what is happening is because his number is a little bit higher than hers, he's always checking, kind of like you were saying that he's always checking today, now, would this be a good time? You know, so it feels like that's all he ever wants. And then she never has time to listen to herself. And so, and he believes she just never wants it. So it's a very good thing for you wives who are listening to ask yourself that question, ask your spouse that question without knowing each other's answer, and then take some time to talk about that. You may not be as far apart as you think you are. So just having that information can relax that difference. And then we encourage that the one who wants it a little bit less, that person take over more of the initiating, because typically the pattern then has started where the one who wants it more is always checking and initiating, and that person backs off and the other one takes on some initiation. And then you can make some deliberate decisions if that isn't working. You know, how often should we have it? How should we schedule it? Should we plan on it? But those differences can be worked out and can work for us rather than against us.
I think a lot of times we don't even know for ourselves how much we would like to have it. And I've heard from a lot of husbands who say, well, I could have sex every day. Well, that's because every day, if it's been weeks, they're thinking about it every day because they want to be with their wives so much. And what we found in our marriage was once my husband felt completely sated and I was feeling sated, we discovered that I actually had a higher drive than he did.
Very often true.
But it was because neither one of us understood what we were interested in and how much we wanted to do that. That was a very shocking discovery for both of us, I have to say.
Mm-hmm. Yes, the initiation pattern often is part of the difficulty in assessing how often you actually want it. Right. So you have to kind of back up and look at how is initiation happening and how could we change our pattern.
I think the other thing is we have this whole sense of what is desire to begin with. So when someone asks, you know, are you in the mood? The answer to that may not be the same as, hey, would you like to have some time together and see if you can get in the mood?
Right.
You know, that's so maybe you would want it more if you feel like you can be responsive or you can try and see how it goes, as opposed to I'm washing the dishes. And suddenly, you know, you ask, do you want sex? It's like, no, I'm washing the dishes.
That is so important. And some specialists in the field have then described that women tend to have desire once they're aroused. The way I define desire, that wouldn't be desired. Desire is just willingness, availability. It's okay. It's something that happens before, not during. Doesn't mean you have to be tuned in and aroused and eager for it and hungry for it. It may just be that you want to be close or you think it's a good time. So it really does depend on how you define desire. Mm-hmm. That's the key.
And in your book, Enjoy, you mentioned that she needs to feel cared for.
Yes.
And that for me was number one. Mm-hmm. And so we worked on building our friendship so that I didn't feel like he was constantly checking in, you know.
Yep.
So it was the demands and pressure totally killed my sex drive.
Yes.
Completely.
And that will do it for sure. Yes. Then you don't really have a chance to get with your own desire.
Right. So.
I was waiting for Gay to say, and you may need to have more than one conversation.
We all have certain things we say.
We all have little things we say over and over, but yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've said that many times. You can't just talk about this one time and expect it to be resolved. No. And it may take many conversations and it may take going to a professional like Joyce or somebody else who can really help you understand what's going on.
Another thing we find extremely helpful is to read a book out loud together, whether that's Enjoy, whether it's The Married Guy's Guide, and we usually recommend they read both of those. So they read the man's and the woman's. Or if there are technical difficulties, like the woman isn't orgasmic or can't get aroused, or the man struggles with ED or there's pain or whatever, then probably reading and working through our book, Restoring the Pleasure. But it's almost like having a therapist there, and I'm the one who gets all our emails and calls for help. And many times it doesn't require them coming to therapy, even though that's what they're calling, thinking they need. But they can buy a book, which is a whole lot less expensive.
Yes.
And read it out loud and start there at least and see. Sometimes that isn't. Sometimes they do need sexual therapy, and that's what we're about. And now there are so many sexual therapists. When we started in the 70s, we were it in terms of Christian sex therapists. But now there have been so many trained and really good ones, and we can usually, and we keep a list of everybody in different states and countries. And when people call us or connect with us, we try to refer them to somebody in their area if possible, mm-hmm. or to a book.
You know, one of the great things about reading a book aloud is it really helps people get comfortable saying those words and speaking about sex in a way that feels kind of safe. You know, I'm not revealing my own stuff, but I can get used to saying the words and having the conversation. And so many times I would read blog posts to my husband, and then just to be able to say, is that true for you?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. In that way, he wasn't trying to figure out how to explain the words for his feelings, because that's not his forte. I'm the one who spends time thinking about his feelings and
defining him for him.
Yes. That wouldn't be the first time.
Yeah. He's basically, wait, is that sad, mad, or glad? Which am I?
Chris said the other day, you know, I am responsible for my own feelings. You do not have to label my feelings.
Well, my husband says, you spent more time thinking about my feelings in a week than I have in my whole life. And he's not wrong. But it really was a good way to start to have some of those conversations and get a sense of, you know, where the other person was coming from. And it really felt like a safe way to do that by reading other people's words out loud.
Right. Well, and another thing it can really help is, like, for example, in the Married Guy's Guide, when we talk about the insecure, needy, or demanding male, we wrote that before the couple who's reading this, we didn't know them. So it's not like we were accusing him or saying this about him. It's a pattern we've seen, and there's reasons for it and everything else. And so they can be reading it together, and the wife can see, you know, do you identify with that at all? Because I think I'm experiencing that. And hopefully he can not get defensive. She can say it in a way that isn't accusing. Or for the woman who has had past abuse or has shut down or whatever, and she reads about it, he can say, you know, I've wondered about that for you, and could that be the case? And she can say, well, I've never thought about it, or I don't realize it. It's a lot easier to talk about each other in relation to what they're reading and them and themselves. You know, that's how I experience it. Or he can say, wow, I never realized that. Or she can say, I never realized that. Mm-hmm. So it really is an important place for many couples to start, is just getting some resources, reading them out loud together. And you don't have to read them. We don't say, don't read it to get through it. You can read one paragraph and have an hour discussion on that paragraph. Mm-hmm. It isn't to get through it. It's for a tool to help the two of you understand where you're at and get to a better place if you're not in a place you want to be.
Absolutely. Yeah, books take the person out of it, so you don't have to take it personally.
Yes.
And I like how you phrase that. Is this your experience? Not like, you know what? You've been doing this.
That's you.
Well, did they know you?
I discovered what's wrong with you. It's on page 78.
Well, knowing differences can certainly lead to understanding. And that's what that's what our kitchen table talks are all about too, is helping wives understand. But we have husbands who listen too.
Yes.
It helps.
And knowing we are different. We are different as men and women. We're different as individuals. And embracing those differences so they work for us rather than against us is so important.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We like to leave our listeners with practical advice they can incorporate into their lives to build better sexual intimacy. Let's share either a practical tool or shift an understanding that worked for us in truly embracing that God designed sex for wives just as much as he designed it for husbands.
Yes, and let's look at that. One thing that is a tool that's so helpful that we just mentioned is the reading out loud together is a tool place to start. But in that, to build intimacy or rebuild intimacy by planning into your lives some non-sexual intimacy. And we do that in our different resources by teaching how to give and receive touch and caress and enjoy just receiving touch without any demand for arousal or release or intercourse, so that we can back up and learn to enjoy. And that's a one tool. And learn learning to give and receive that touch, and then moving ahead to more erotic stimulation when both are ready for that. And as a result of our experience over the years and the sex and the brain research, well, actually, we had created this formula for intimacy that I'm going to share with you and will be available for you from our clinical observation. And then the sex and the brain research came out, and we could justify why we had come up with it. We had come up from seeing in our practice that it worked, but there were actually facts that made it work. But the formula for intimacy is taking time, and the most important part of it is the 15 minutes per day where we take time to connect, and it's really prescriptive. We really want you to do it exactly as prescribed, and that's that you start with sharing something emotional. And when you do that, and it should be a positive, this isn't a time to work out problems. This isn't a time to plan your day for the next day, who's going to do what and who's going to take the responsibility for this. This is just to, and parents can do this with little children around, with teenage children around. It's not in any way going to violate anyone, but in it, like I'm standing right now in our room at a what we call our bar, which is kind of our control center in our home. It's where we gather, and Cliff will take a bar stool on one side. It's not a bar in the sense of serving alcohol. That isn't allowed. It's a bar in the sense of it's where we have everything that we make our plans. And I can stand where I'm standing right now, and Cliff can be on the other side, and we can have eye-to-eye contact. And that eye-to-eye contact is what we discovered from the sex and brain research makes such a difference. It's the same reason why when a mother and father have a newborn baby, it's important that they hold the baby and look in the baby's eyes. When we look eye to eye, our body, our brain produces oxytocin, the bonding hormone. And that helps us. We talked earlier about the shift from dopamine, the newness excitement, to the long-term attachment. And so we want to start that 15 minutes a day, just looking into each other's eyes and sharing something. It can be a thought you had during the day, some way God blessed you, a passage you read. It could be a thought you had about each other, what you really appreciated. But it could just be, you know, I hope when we get over this COVID, we can do this or whatever it is, that it just is something positive. And if you're doing it every day, it's going to be very different from day to day. You don't want to just keep saying the same thing. Well, what I really like about you is how you take out the garbage, you know. It's not that kind of a thing. And what else, knowing we're going to do it, helps us think about what we feel positively. It helps us focus on positive thoughts and feelings. So knowing we're going to do it daily. And when I say daily, it's kind of like, I think about like exercising. I want to exercise every day. I'm very happy if I exercise 5 times a week. So we plan for every day. We don't rigidly probably make it happen every day. But if you're down to twice a week, you know, you may need to up it a little bit. So taking that first 5 minutes or so just to share some positives and look into each other's eyes. And then the next step is to connect wherever you are spiritually, bring God into your experience, whether that's reading. There are many little couples devotionals. You can get a box of Bible verses and pull one out. There are many ways you can connect. You can just say a prayer together. And then the third part, so it's connecting emotionally, then spiritually, and then the last is physical. And you start with a hug. And that's got to be a full front-to-front body hug where you embrace each other and really hold each other for 20 seconds. And if you want, it can be kind of fun to practice this and set your timer. You know, if you can say Google, set a timer for 20 seconds or however you do it in your home. Mm-hmm. And you hug really intensely. And Cliff is a hugger. I did not grow up in a family. In fact, my sister always says Cliff came into our family and taught us how to hug because he's a hugger. And I wasn't naturally. I have to, with the kids, even when they were growing up, I had to remind myself about the importance of hugging. And he's a great hugger. In fact, we've got a 5-year-old granddaughter and she's a great hugger. And her daddy asked her just recently, where did you learn to hug? Grandpa.
Oh, that's so sweet.
So getting a 20 second hug and then 5 to 30 seconds of passionate kissing. Now, that is what's hard for many women, because this is what happens over a lifetime. And this is how to keep a little bit of dopamine spark alive. Because the passion of kissing is what gives the dopamine even after 57 years of marriage. But so many women stop kissing because he comes up to her when she's washing dishes and wants to kiss. And then she thinks, do I want sex tonight or not? I wouldn't want to lead him on. Mm. So then she turns the cheek rather than kiss passionately because it's become a sign of whether or not I want sex. And that's why this is not to lead to sex. Mm. This is just to kiss passionately for the sake of kissing passionately. And if we kiss passionately every day, it will keep some dopamine spark. It's not the same as the newness, but it does keep some. But it's important to have the oxytocin before the dopamine, because we do need that first in order to loosen up. And for men or women who have difficulty with passionate kissing, in some cultures we find that's not a common thing to kiss passionately, start gently. Start just with some soft lip to lip, and then let the one who is most cautious lead. This is again where the one, don't take over. If one of you is really a good get in there and smooch it up kisser, and the other one gets offended by that, let the one who gets offended go at their pace. And this is a lot to give you, but it's really kind of an easy formula. And the 15 minutes a day is the part of the formula that's most important. If you start one thing, that's what we would recommend.
Very cool.
Yeah, I love that.
That's a great tool.
I love that.
Will we have a little download about on that for
we'll have that.
Yeah.
We'll have that in the show notes.
Mm-hmm. I love that hugging and kissing and how that's going to bring out that oxytocin. And I've talked about kissing a lot and how it diminishes over the course of marriage. And I've also talked to a fair number of wives who say that the kissing, that he may not kiss as long as she wants, because once married, he's kind of like, well, it's nice that my mouth is on your mouth, but now I get permission to move other places. And you're wait, let's have a longer kissing so I can get everything going and just enjoy the kiss for its own sake.
It's right. So important. It's really important. In fact, this is not important for this, so you can delete it. But we often tell married couples, premarital couples, how is kissing for you? Because we say, sometimes premarital couples will say, well, how are we going to know we're compatible if we don't have sex before marriage? And we say, it depends on how your kissing is. If kissing isn't good for you, either you better work on it so it becomes good, or it may not be that you're compatible. So kissing is the barometer of how sex will be in marriage. If kissing is still good, sex will likely still be good. It may not be the same. Like for Cliff and I at this stage of life, it isn't the same as it was. But kissing is still good. So there's still that connection, and there's still so much we can enjoy, even if our bodies don't work the same as they did originally. So.
Yeah, they change.
Any other practical tips, ladies, or paradigm shifts, or anything else you want to share?
Yeah, I would just encourage any of our listeners who still have that mindset of sex is primarily for him, just to take to heart all of these things that Joyce has said, take a look at some of her books, and really begin to make that shift into understanding that it's for you too.
Yes.
One of the things that really helped me was to start by focusing on what I knew I could enjoy. And for me, that was after sex, I feel emotionally closer to my husband. And so even if I didn't want sex, I could still think, but I want that thing that comes right after it. And so that sort of became my invitation into the sexual experience. Then over time, I didn't need to think about that. But that was one thing I knew would be positive for me. And I let that be, as I said, my invitation into the sexual encounter so that I could start working on doing that more often. And then, as I said, it turned out I had a higher drive than my husband did at that time. Mm-hmm.
That's great. And that sometimes women can't, or men if it's the man's side, can't think of anything positive that they enjoy. And that's where working through restoring the pleasure and eliminating, mm-hmm. starting over so they can find what is enjoyable for them.
For me, I think the biggest paradigm shift that I dealt with in getting over my premarital promiscuous past and then moving into really embracing this gift of sex and marriage, for me, a lot of it was really scriptural. It was me getting into the verses, and I've talked about before how for me, 1 Corinthians 6, 9 through 11, where it says, some of you were sexually immoral, but you have been sanctified. And so for me, it was like, that's what you were. And having that past tense and really embracing, okay, but Jesus did all this work for me. And he's basically saying, that's not you anymore. And you're Sadie, married lady, and you get to enjoy sex. This is what I want to bless you with. And then going, getting back into the Song of Songs and seeing what it was supposed to look like. And I rehearsed certain verses in my head whenever bad thoughts came up that I knew were not consistent with God's truth about sex. And eventually they just soaked in and it became what I believed.
Sometimes women come to us and the only way they can be responsive is if they picture what they came across as a young girl in their dad's pornography, or if they were babysitting in the home where there was pornography. And now they have to see women's bodies, and they're not mm-hmm. attracted to women's bodies, but that was their first, you know, where I talked about however your first response starts, their first response started there. And then now they can't be responsive unless they picture that, and they don't want to picture that, but they want to have a response with their husband. So they're torn. And one of the things that has helped as women memorizing passages in the Song of Solomon and replacing the images with the Song of Solomon passages in their mind. And that's been a helpful tool for them.
Beautiful.
So. Lovely. I've said before, you know, in the middle of lovemaking in my head, I belong to him and his desire is for me.
Mm-hmm. I would just like to end with the verse that Joyce has used in the book, and she uses the Message version, which to me is so powerful because it really does just put it in common language. And it's self-explanatory. So 1 Corinthians 7, five, the marriage bed must be a place of mutuality. Bingo card. That's one of the words we use a lot, Joyce, mutuality. So the marriage bed must be a place of mutuality. The husband seeking to satisfy his wife and the wife seeking to satisfy her husband. Marriage is not a place to stand up for your rights. Marriage is a decision to serve one another, whether in bed or out.
I love that. That's verses 3 through 5.
Thank you. Well, Joyce, would you please tell our listeners where they can find you?
They can find us on passionatecommitment.com, and that's our website. And go to us, and if you click contact us and send an email, it comes into my inbox. So that's probably the easiest way to get to us.
Yeah. Well, check out Joyce and Cliff Penner's website, passionatecommitment.com. where they have lots of good stuff.
If you don't remember it, you can just Google us and you'll get to it.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And we'll have a link to that in our show notes to make it super easy for our listeners.
Yes. Yes. And thank you for permission for printing the formula for intimacy for our listeners as well.
Yeah. Thank you so much for being here. Yeah.
Yes. Such a delight.
Great. Very fun. Nice to be with you and get to know you.
Thank you so much.
All right.
Okay. Yeah. Bye-bye.
Yes, we're done. Bye. Thanks, Joyce.
Thanks, Joyce.
Bye.
Bye.